Well, hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake, and the one and only Mr. Ben Clark. No Marcel this week, Ben. This is like the olden days, mate.
You only get one of us. You never see me and Marcel in the same place at the same time.
Yeah. And Marcel's probably he's probably on holiday. So, Ben, got a bit to chat about. Not loads, obviously. Yeah, apologies for those that were expecting or hoping for a podcast last week, or you're welcome to the ones that were thankful that we didn't record last week. Work schedules for me and probably you as well, Ben, after your holiday. Just got a bit mental. So, yeah, apologies for no pod last week, but the picks still went in. Gareth has still been furiously putting those into the spreadsheet. Before the points for this weekend, Tom Hiscock leads the way. Hiscock has 128 points. Jesse Hansen, 127. That's your one and two. Then Vronnie and Noel. Mattis are doing well in third. Ben, you and I and Marcel not doing very well, as usual.
I had noticed.
I'd say that it's because we're not taking it seriously, but I mean, I do try every week, but get absolutely nowhere near it.
I keep thinking when I'm not there and I send my picks in via text that I'll have a better set of results because I'm not on the spot on the podcast and I can put more time and thought into it. And those ones normally end up being worse than when I just guess on the show.
Well, I mean, to be fair, there have been six GSs where people have, I'm pretty sure probably 90% of the guys at the top have all put Odomat. So there's maybe that's our only saving grace.
So if we can't pick Odomat, that is true.
Yeah. So if we added 60 points to our scores, we would still not be doing that well.
Might be in the top 30 as opposed to the top 100.
We'd get ourselves a second run. Well, should we start with Bansko, a rainy Bansko? The only race was the GS, and it was Marco Odermatt yet again who was on fire and on form. The only man to get within a second of Marco was Alexander Steen Olsen. He was 0.91 back. Then Feller, yet again on a podium on GS, he's going well, 1.08. And Brennsteiner, another Austrian, on the podium. Ben, conditions look pretty good, really. The athletes were talking about the changeable snow conditions and how they found it quite difficult because it was quite grippy, quite aggressive, and then really slick on that sort of middle steep with the fall away. And then through those rollers at the bottom went into a slightly more grippy, but not quite as grippy as the top. They talked about how difficult it was to gain, to sort of be able to read the terrain. I mean, I say they found it difficult. Odermatt didn't find it difficult, but everybody else did.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things when you get to a certain level of skiing. Obviously, the level of skiing I was at, we'd never really had to worry too much about being good enough to notice changeable snow conditions on the way down. There was either snow or there wasn't, or it was ice or slush.
Or grass after all the ruts.
Or grass in the bottom of the ruts, which did happen a few times. But obviously, the kind of intricacies these guys have in their setups for different types of conditions, you can imagine it being quite difficult then when you're looking at a 12, minute 15 GS course with three or four different snow types on the way down. You know, you've got to go through with the technician what wax you think is going to work on those, what edges are going to work best, and what you think is going to be the best kind of all-round ski for that day. If you are someone who is quite precise and need it very specific, you're going to be at a massive disadvantage to someone who can, if you can just make any set of skis work on any conditions, which Odermatt appears to be able to do at the moment. I think you could just give him a brand new set of skis and send him down a GS course and he'd probably find a way to win a World Cup on them, which is, you know, really impressive when we think of the struggles of Henrik Kristoffersen at the moment.
Yeah.
Odermatt just seems to be on another planet in terms of no matter how difficult everyone makes a run look, he makes it look easy.
I do think he's pushing though, doesn't he? I mean, we've seen mistakes over the last few rounds that maybe we haven't seen from him as consistently. Sure, we always saw small amounts of mistakes. But remember, like the beginning of this year and last year, the guy just never put foot wrong. Whereas this year, he's making mistakes, but then obviously catching them pretty soon, all bar the one where he nearly didn't win. But, you know, he made mistakes in Bansko through that middle bit and then all of a sudden went, all right, I've made those mistakes and let's stop messing around and I'll get back to it.
He does seem to have incredible feel for what's going on though, and it's a much cleaner version of what we used to see with Marcel Hirscher, but he had a similar ability to find the edge, and then when he toppled over it, pull it back immediately. So when Odomat's making mistakes, it's not three or four gates worth, it's a gate or half a gate of, oh, he's got that wrong, or he's a bit too far inside or back. And then it's almost like a, you click your fingers and he's back in the exact right position. And the touch he's got at the moment means he's able to pick so much more direct line than other people. So in those conditions, in the bits where it is a bit softer or harder, and that you've got the judders in the second run, you see people trying to take the same line as him and they just get bounced out. Whereas he just seems to be able to pick up a bit of a straighter line and still just pick up the turn effortlessly, even when it's quite bumpy. And it's phenomenal to watch.
Who do you think is going to get be able to dis who's going to be the person that knocks him off his perch? We're at round 6 of 11, so we've got plenty of GSs still to go. Zubcic is second in the table, but it's all pretty tight after Zubcic. You've got Krejcik in third. Stina Olsson tied actually with Henrik Kristoffersen in fourth, and then obviously Schwarz, but then you've got Fella and Loic Maillard and Verdoux. Can you see, are we waiting for just Odomat to make one too many mistakes, or just overcook it ever so slightly, or I
I
don't know,
think
have a line
so.
down because he's won everything already, or who's going to
I
get it?
think so. The thoughts running through my head when they were talking, when they keep showing the graphic each time he starts saying last five results, and it's just first, 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 first. I was trying to think, when was the last time, if ever, someone's won every GS on a World Cup tour? Was the thought I went to, rather than who could unseat him? It's, will he win all 11 GSs?
I think
And
we've had.
has that been done before?
I think it's been done before by Stenmark, but I think those were eras when there was quite a lot less. I mean, I haven't researched that. That is literally just pulled off the top of my head from somewhere, but I'm sure somebody will dig out the stat. But I think it has been done before, but I think it was in an era where there weren't as many.
And so he's got a 300-point lead in the GS standings and best part of a 1,000-point lead in the overall standings. So things like targets like, okay, I want to win every GS this season, are going to be the kind of targets pushing him, because a lot of his best and closest competitors, certainly in the overall and the GS standings, are out injured now. So it'll be fantastic and fascinating to see if he could do it. Obviously, we want some of the races to be a bit closer and make it more exciting. But if he could pull that off in today's era, where people do pick up injuries and the schedule is quite grueling, and he's doing all the speed events as well, if he could somehow come away with 11 out of 11, that would be out of this world, incredible. But like you said, like, I think realistically, on any given race, I don't think he can ski his best and anyone beat him at the moment. It's going to need to be mistakes from him and
Well,
someone else having an absolute monster.
here you go. Marco in this season, Marco Schwarz has been second twice. Filip Zubcic has been second once. Where's the other? Then you've got Kilder was second once. Then you've got Fella who is second once, and then Stine Olsen who is second once. So, they're really peppered around in terms of, who's trying. And I wonder whether we are seeing quite a sort of a varied second and third place because everybody's absolutely on the full limit to try and get as close as they possibly can. They're making mistakes, whereas obviously Odomat makes small mistakes, but like you say, already picks them up.
Yeah, what I have found interesting this year that was a bit of a surprise was, McGrath's form seems to have dropped right off in GS, because prior to this season, you probably would have said he was
Better chess
more of
gear.
a GS skier than he was slalom. And then this year he's been, on the verge of winning slaloms and having those kind of second run errors. But his GS has not looked anything like what it was. And as someone who's picked up some injuries and had a few knee rebuilds along the way, it's hard to know quite where he's at health wise, but the fact that he's performing in slalom is impressive. But then I just it's so strange, because he looked like one of the people a couple of years ago you would have said might be up for challenging for the GS Globe, because he's got such a smooth, relaxed style. Yes, he does push it to limits because he is still quite young and raw, and he is pushing for that, where is the ultimate amount of speed, which people get wrong sometimes. But yeah, I just found it a little bit strange that he's not quite been able to find that balance this year, or whether just he spent the off season just saying, you know what, I'm just going to try and smash slalom this year.
I don't know. I think Obviously, the season was going really well, especially like you say on the slalom side. But then I think he's found himself in a bit of a negative spiral off the back of Kitzbühel when he did his first DNF, and then basically since Kitzbühel, every single race he's really struggled, hasn't he, in terms of finishing anyway and finishing quick. So hopefully he can pull his way out of it, but it's not easy. It's really not easy to pull yourself out of a spiral. But the men have got a week. If you're just a tech skier like he is, you got a weekend off this weekend, because obviously the men are racing over in Kvitfjell for speed races. So he picked up a bit of a knock, didn't he, when he crashed in the GS. So maybe some time away, just reevaluate, get a bit of love for it again. And we always talk about that, don't we, as a way to sort of reset and sort of crack on, really.
Yeah, you and Charlie were both on comms this weekend, and you both sounded equally as gutted for Harry Laidlaw as well on that second run. He was the other person who crashed on the second run. He did absolutely monstrous work getting from 43 into that second run. Looked like he was out going, not all guns blazing on the second run, but looked like he was skiing really nicely and really well. I was absolutely gutted for him when he came out.
Mate, it was so commendable watching him fight his way down. You know, not we always talk about it, don't we? When somebody's not been in the second run before, about how much they're going to push and all this sort of stuff. And when you're setting records for your country, like the extra pressure that is, you know, never been done before, never scored World Cup points before, you personally, but then Australia never scored World Cup GS points before. And then all of a sudden you're like, and I just love the stones on him just to go, I'm just going to push this and I'm going to take advantage. And it's, you know, all or nothing, and absolute heartbreaker that it was nothing. I wonder
Yeah, I mean, but it was Ian, and hopefully we see him in that position in a couple of weeks' time again, where he's back in that second run, because he's clearly got the speed that he needs to be there.
Well, I think it's
And
the
like you said,
belief
the
as well, though,
conditions
isn't it, man?
weren't. Pardon?
It's the belief, isn't it, mate?
Yeah.
For him now, he's done it once. I mean, he will have had internal belief, and the coaches will have known that he's got the ability and all this sort of stuff, but then nothing beats having done it before.
Yeah, and we've seen that kind of thing when. You know, when Charlie Raposo had the kind of good results in the parallels, actually you could really see that reflecting his confidence in his skiing in the other World Cup GSs afterwards. And we've seen it with Charlie Guest when she gets on a run of form in slalom as well, and we're seeing it with the guys in the slalom as well, with Billy and Laurie. When they get those second runs, the next race you see them push out on the first run, it just looks more like
Yeah,
they
100%.
think they've got it in the tank.
Anybody else you want to talk about in the GS?
No, that was really, really good racing, actually. I'd like you said, the conditions were a bit weird, but I did enjoy that as a race, and watching people on top of the game, having to figure out on the fly how to work in those different
Yeah.
snow types is really fun to do, because it's just sometimes they're also perfect, for want of a better word. You get annoyed that they make it look so easy. So watching them having to really
Yeah.
think about what they're doing and feel their way down is always really fun for me, because it makes it look more like they're human.
It's a cool hill as well, though. I really do like that hill. I raced Europa Cup there a couple of times. I raced World Cup there in speed a couple of times, and it was there's a lot in there. And that terrain, that is actually quite a bit steeper than you realise, that where it was really slick on the sort of main steep, if you like. And it is actually quite narrow as well, so the speed does tend to stay quite high. Yeah, I really liked it. Shame. Well, we'll move on to the slalom qu very, very quickly now. But it was a real shame that the weather wasn't quite there for the second day. So the slalom was not the most difficult of hills, was it? Because it starts relatively low down that steep, because they want to finish in the same finish area, which is at sort of bottom of the resort, right at the top of the gondola that you have to get if you want to go all the way up. And was it the right thing to do? I think it probably was, really. It was a shame, but it was so much of a bib draw that, you know, you were getting nowhere near close. It was, you know, it would have been nothing, taking absolutely nothing away from Daniel Yule with his 30 to first win, because he got lucky. And I loved his interviews, actually. He said he got lucky that he managed to make it in, but then he. Which is 100% right, but then he absolutely smashed that second run, and his skiing on that second run was incredible to take the risk, to go for it. He knew exactly what to do. He didn't put foot wrong, all those sort of sporting cliches, and he won. Now, did he deserve to win? Well, on the day, yes, he did. But you don't want those types of conditions and those types of races happening week in, week out. Like the odd one here or there, like it's a cool story. It's great for the, great for a bit of chat. It's great for pulling new people into sport and sort of a bit of slightly extra excitement, if you like, records set and all this sort of stuff. But actually, to do it week in, to do it for a couple of weeks on the bounce, I think it was probably right that it was canned. What do you reckon?
What I did like for the Chamonix race was the fact that Noel was still close to winning. So
Yeah.
those races where it is a conditions race, as we'd call it, or a you're lucky if you sneak into 30th rather than 25th in terms of how the second run pans out. The fact that Noel got to go number two on the first run, set the fastest time, and then was only 1800ths off winning the race.
Yeah.
I think if you've got races where he had a second and a half lead and come down 3 seconds off without making any mistakes, then you could say this course isn't suitable. And I think that's where Bansko was headed, because I think Dave was right on the bubble of the 30, wasn't he? And he was 4.5 seconds off,
Yeah.
and that wasn't the lead. I think it was maybe 1.5, 2 the week before. And I think that shows the difference in the conditions, because if whoever had started first on the second run had a 4.5 second disadvantage against whoever was winning and ended up taking the win, that's not as good of a look, if that makes sense. So
Because
obviously you were looking at the conditions a lot more, doing the commentary and having all the feeds live from the event. It looked grim. It looked like
mate,
it
you could
was trying
barely
to.
see anything. Some of those cameras, you could see practically nothing.
They did, yeah. It was quite funny with you and Charlie trying to work out just what was going on in the first like 10, 15 gates, because all it was just a blur. It's just like there's a person in the gate, I can see a silhouette, and then I can't see anything other than the
I
clock for the
think I
first
can hear
15
gates
seconds.
slapping against the ground. And so, well, also, it kind of robbed us of the did he didn't he straddle scenario.
Of course he didn't.
Shut up, of course he did,
I'm
mate.
saying he didn't because I picked him. So, and all the cameras were so blurry, it's hard to get definitive evidence that he definitely did. So, I'm
80
going with he didn't, and I'm going to take my 5
87%
points.
87% of voters said that he straddles, and
I
so.
mean, they listen to a podcast with us on it, so they clearly don't know anything.
But yeah, some
No,
plenty of knowledgeable people have
it
actually, to be
definitely
fair.
looked like the body movement and kind of ski movement of someone who straddled, but from that reverse angle, it's so tight. I can't see if his tip's gone the right side or
Mate,
the wrong side
he
from
broke the
there.
gate. You could see him trip. If they DQ'd AJ last year, they will have had to have DQ'd that. I'm sorry. Like that's and if they didn't, AJ should be getting his trophy back and Steen Olsen should
I
be.
would not have wanted to have been the gate judge having to look at that. Obviously they've got the benefit of using the video replays and stuff, but obviously with the conditions the way they were, they really weren't that clear. So if it came down to who saw what for making that decision, but I'm sorry, I got snow in my eyes, I couldn't see either.
No, I reckon I almost or well, you saw the mechanics of him go with his tip the wrong way. There was a broken bit down the gate. I think he knew he straddled. Oh, no, I wasn't sure. Did all that sort of stuff. I'm sorry, mate. We got you. We
I
got
don't
you.
think that's the thing that sometimes you see with this, and you see with say footballers when they're saying they haven't touched someone when they've just kicked someone over. I don't think we'd be particularly good at being able to keep a straight face whilst lying, that we know we've done something wrong. I'd just sit there, my face would be bright red. A bit, no, I definitely didn't straddle. I don't think I did.
No. It's terrible conditions. Although I think in those conditions, maybe the only time that you could possibly, and AJ's one actually, to be fair, when the conditions are that bad, and it did look like there was holes, although he was this bib two or whatever he was, bib three. Yes, he was one of the. It was wholly by the gates because there wasn't a base because it had been washed away. I think Benefit of the doubt, but if he hadn't been DQ'd, AJ should be getting his trophy back, and Steen Olsen will have no wins against his name. So I think, yeah.
But I do still get my 5 points, right? Because he was winning when the race was cancelled.
Absolutely not.
I
Although
feel like I need
I would
Marcel to
have,
do the request for rules changes. I feel like
I
I
would
need
have had
Marcel
three
here with
because
me.
Haugen was second. So, but then lots of people probably went for Noel. So no, then I'd be further away. So yeah, a bit of a shame, but I think ultimately probably the right call. I really hope that they've somehow managed to squeeze an extra one in. Not exactly sure where the space on the calendar is. Maybe over in Kranjska Gora, but then again, you're trying to then bang in an extra race in Kranjska Gora in March. Yeah, but in terms of the title, though, I mean it's obviously wide open, that slalom title for the men. So you don't really want to be robbed of a sort of an extra race, do you really?
There are probably tighter races or tighter titles out there. Like Manny's been more consistent than ever this year. I'm not going to call him the most consistent racer on tour because that's yours and Marcel's weird thing to say. But he
True that.
this year his slalom skiing has been incredible, and obviously the last couple of weeks his GS has really picked up. But that yeah, he's got a fairly hefty lead on Strasser at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, 100 and what's that, 164? Can I count?
Yeah, so it would take Philip having a couple of DNFs for that to really, or a
But he's
couple
not been
bad
any worse than
races.
fifth.
Yeah, so he's going to need to have a bad race for people to start reading him in, or it's going to take Strasser, Noel, or Yule to win three in a row to start really kind of pulling
Well,
that gap
Strasser's
back
really gone
in.
off the boil, hasn't he? He's not getting to grips with these soft. I mean, he didn't in obviously in Schladming. You got the rock hard piece right in Kitzbühel, then the soft piece that he got right in Schladming, and then after that he's really struggled. Daniel Yule obviously saved his own bacon in Chamonix, and then Clément Noël, he's even further off. So he's like 200 points. So 220 something, 219, 18 points. So it's yeah, I do like. I mean, Manny Fella's doing so well this year. I am really pleased to see that but his slalom skiing, you can definitely see now has gone into like defensive mode almost, as he hasn't got that extra all out that he obviously did earlier on in the season, because he's now thinking about, surely he's now thinking about the overall.
I'd be interested to see how he skis on the next race with much more solid snow. If we go back to like a bulletproof ice day, I don't know whether he's being that bit more defensive because the conditions are a lot
You need a bit
softer.
more
Like that's
space.
where he's had a lot more kind of problems in the past in terms of, you know, that you see the people when they're going that bit more aggressive, you see a lot more straddles for the people who take a line like he does, where you go in, tips, boots, ankles all on top of the gate, and then
Yeah.
just whack the pressure, and it's just asking for trouble in those softer
Yeah,
conditions. Whereas
true.
when it's icy, you've got that much better feel for it because it's what they train day in, day out. It's so much easier for them to judge. So yeah, it'll be a really interesting race. I kind of want some of the others to kind of win the next couple just to make it a bit closer without him having any problems.
Yeah.
But the other thing is just hoping his back holds up, especially with the success he's having in GS. Like he's had those problems throughout his career with a bad back, and we've already seen Zinhausen struggle and have to miss a race because of his back being too bad. So I just don't want that slalom title being messed up
Yeah,
by
exactly. Yeah, it makes
dodgy
sense.
dodgy back.
Wise words, my friend, wise words. Well, whilst the men needed their umbrellas for the second week in succession, the women were over in Soldeo in Andorra, which actually seemed to have a lovely time sort of dusting of snow to make it look quite wintry over there. First race was the Giant Slalom, where Lara Gutberami was really on form on the second run, where she went from ninth to take the victory. Alice Robinson came very, very close. She was only a hundredth of a second behind Gutberami. And then welcome to a Giant Slalom World Cup podium, AJ Hurt, from sixth to third. So she backed up her slalom podium earlier on in the season with a GS podium so far this year. The two Italians were Brignoni was second after the first run, and then Bassino was leading. Bassino looked like she gone back to being a little bit cautious, maybe, and being protective of that position, having had a good first run, which she hasn't really had so far this season. And Brignone just narrowly missed out on the podium, just tiny two, a couple extra mistakes that she made towards the bottom, which meant that her opportunity to close the gap on Gurbrami went amiss. What did you make of that one then?
I really liked that race. It was really good fun. The light was a bit flat in places, which always makes it a bit harder. But I kind of like the layout of the hill. Like you, it, in places you're like, is it a bit flat? But then the pitch in Soldeo does actually look like quite a fun pitch to race as
Yeah.
well. I think Bacino was probably came a little bit undone because that second run was, you know, 3 4 seconds faster, so it was quite straight in comparison to the first, which never particularly suits her. She's quite a small lady, and she generally seems to do better with the kind of steeper, wider swinging courses.
Yeah.
So the fact that the second course, I think Gubrani was like maybe 3.5 4 seconds quicker on the second run, so shows just how much the difference between those two runs was. So that probably led a little bit to her undoing, but wasn't like she collapsed or anything. She was still only 0.3 off. And we talked about this before. I always like when the races are this close. So 10 people inside a second means, you know, you've got to that point of the business end of the second run, and still anyone can win it. And like you
Yeah.
said, Gubarami probably would have been a bit disappointed with the first run. Wasn't really her best skiing, but you could see on that second run she meant business, and it was much more what we're used to seeing from her. So it was an absolute storm. And again, gutted for Alice Robinson though, because that hundredth of a second is just absolutely nothing, which
I know it stings
I
a bit.
thought she had it. The second run she put down, she looked really controlled and composed for someone who at times could be quite a wild skier. She looked completely in control and fast, which is, you know, sometimes when people who are quite wild in their skiing go for that, okay, I'm going to be more controlled, it costs them so much time that, you know, they have to kind of go back to the drawing board and work out how to approach those runs. Whereas she looked like she'd found a really good balance on that second run. So I was a bit gutted for her, because obviously Laura Cooper-Army's had her more than her fair share of wins on the World Cup tour over the
Yeah.
years. So Alice Robinson's probably thinking a little bit more about where her next one's coming from. But great to see her back. We said earlier in the year we want to see her back to her best, and this was another performance that showed she's still definitely got that skiing in her.
Well, yeah, she's now got three second places on the tour so far this season and one third. So, really obviously finding some tremendous form, but just yeah, just came up against Gurbrami, who is skiing some of the best GS she skied in her life. I mean, Gurbrami's now got four wins this season and two second places, and not been outside sixth, I think 40 points. It's 40 points sixth. So, good for her. Gurbrami did what she needed to do. Like, she's under pressure to. Well, I wonder if she, how much she's thinking about it. What do you think, Ben? With the overall, obviously she started leading by 5 points, having obviously with Schifrin out. Do you think that's creeping into her mind? Do you think that's something that's going to be affecting her, or is she just one of those where, I mean, she gives off the impression that she's like whatever and just sort of ski racing.
It's so hard to tell with her, because, you know, this time last year, or, you know, World Champs and World Cup finals last year, we were talking about her being at a strop and complaining and saying she was just going to push out the gate and not try and
Yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And then this year she's actually looked like she's really enjoying herself and having a great time. But she's quite a tough one to read in terms of that kind of bigger picture, because with some people you can see when they're kind of concentrating on the overall, and some people talk about it. The fact that she's now in the lead will not have passed her by. She's going to be very well aware of that now. And now she'll probably be looking at the remaining GS Super Gs and downhills and saying, okay, what, you know, Godgi is out for the rest of the season. Where does that put me in the rest of the downhills? Where does that put me in the rest of the Super Gs?
Did I read that Schifrin's not starting this weekend? I think I did, didn't I?
I'm not sure. I think they keep the thing I keep reading is day by day and lots of loading tests and bits and pieces. And seeing as it's a speed weekend and she crashed in speed, knowing Schifrin, she doesn't do a ton of speed these days anyway. So it wouldn't surprise me if she, you know, left this weekend out and came back in, where are they, after Val di Fassa. Oh, that's Super G's as well. So she could give herself best part of 3 weeks and come in for the next set of tech races later on in the season.
Yeah, I think I mean Schifrin doesn't really, you know, she doesn't have, obviously doesn't have anything to prove. So I think you're right. She'll probably only come back when she's really ready, and if it means giving up the overall, I mean, she's got plenty of records. She doesn't need another overall if she doesn't feel like she's, you know, if she'd never won an overall before and she was injured, then I'm sure she would be coming back a bit earlier. But she's got nothing to gain and everything to lose, really, doesn't she, by coming back too early? Plus, her other half is also out, so they're having a very nice, lovely, romantic time, which I'm thankful that we're not seeing too much of on the social media channels.
Marcel, get a t-shirt ready.
It's interesting. I've got.
Well, if oh, again, it would be interesting to know Lara Gurbrami's thoughts on the matter and what her goals were going into the season, because there's only two slaloms and two GSs left in the women's tour. So with that in mind, we've got a few weeks of speed events. If Schifrin's not comfortable racing speed because of just crashing in it and not being confident of what her body can go through, then we may well have, you know, Gurbrami with a few hundred points lead by the time we come into the next tech events, which could make for a really exciting finale. But yeah, I mean, Schifrin's gonna do whatever she thinks is best for her, you know, health, fitness, body, and all those kind of things. So Gurbrami, just keep doing whatever races you're planning on doing, keep winning, and you know, if we can get to the last weekend with the globe still up for grabs, those are the types of races we want.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's 135 points, the difference between Gurbrami and Brignone at the moment. So that GS Tour, yes, there aren't that many left. Was it two left? But I mean, that's one DNF, isn't it? And a first versus third. So it's all up for grabs. But AJ Hirt, you know, the Americans, as well on the second day of racing, are not short of podiums, even though the great Mikko Schifrin's not there. AJ Hirt, what an absolutely tremendous season she's had, and this sort of really quick rise. Obviously, we'd seen her on the World Cup tour, we'd seen her pick up a few World Cup points before, but never really, you know, featured that heavily. And then all of a sudden, now she's one to watch, not only in one discipline, but two disciplines. Just what a wicked, wicked time she must be having.
Oh yeah, and I don't know her skiing as well as a lot of the other racers on the tour who I've been watching for a lot longer, and you know, some of the commentary suggests that she's kind of a bit, you know, all or nothing or a bit wild and full attack and those kind of things, which you know we've seen from the likes of Breezy Johnson and on the speed side and probably Paula on the tech side. You know, it could be lightning, could be a crash. You're never quite sure what you're going to see. But watching her this weekend, she looked, you know, really, really like both fast and also like enjoying it, which is something we see from a lot of people on the tour. When things are going right, it's important that you really do soak up the good performances and actually feel the enjoyment of it, because it's a really hard sport and there can be times where you, for love nor money, cannot work out why you aren't going faster, and you could be trying everything possible to do. So you really need to make sure you enjoy when things like this happen. And you know, having two podiums in a season is incredible. And she's only like 23, so she's just at the start of a journey that could, you know, be going on for another 10 years now. And it's really exciting to watch. And you know, it takes a bit of the weight off Schifrin's shoulders with other people picking up these podiums. Not that, you know, she's doing it for the team anyway. You know, she's part of the team and, you know, does her thing for the American, you know, on the tour. But, you know, she's trying to win her races and go for her records. I don't think she necessarily feels the pressure to win on behalf of anyone else, but
No.
it must be really good to you know, we talked about it before with like kind of Bodie and Lindsay just kind of being the only ones doing anything for periods of time, and then Ted Ligety when he was around. And it's nice when there are multiple people
Yeah, I mean, look at
picking up
this.
those
See,
podiums.
I reckon the Americans as a team take out Schifrin's multiple wins, but in terms of different names with podiums this year, the women are doing tremendously well. Jackie Wiles, you've got obviously AJ, Paula, Schifrin, Have I missed one? No. For on that side of things, you've got those ladies all absolutely smashing it. River was obviously very close in GS. So yeah, I think it's. Oh, and Bryce Bennett on the men's side, obviously, but the men obviously not quite as going quite as well as the women's side of things. But I wonder if again that's sort of like a bit of the Schifrin effect, feel good places. They're all in it together, quite a team environment. Yes, that Schifrin's still got her own group around her, but just it again shows the importance. And how often do we talk about how important it is to be around a big team and just for the feel good vibes? Doesn't even need to be for the actual training. Just needs to be for like, a change in pace, a change in scenery, or just some chat with somebody else. I think it's really, really good. Whilst anything else to add on the GS, by the way?
No, that was, it was a really good race, and I enjoyed it. And the more, like I said, the more times we can get races where there's 10 people in the space of a second, and there's the, more exciting for everyone.
Do you want to talk about the schedule, the Schifrin schedule comments and injury comments?
Do you do just slalom and then do that?
All right.
Yeah, we'll just
It's like a
finish the
little
race
teaser.
in so we don't get sacked.
It's like a little teaser that one for further down the
Yeah.
line. Okay, last race before Ben has his two cents on that one was the slalom, and Anna Sven Larsson skied really, really well to take the win. What a change in scenery she's had, a change in performance that she's had over this season. First few races was all at sea, couldn't find pace for love nor money, and then all of a sudden she's back on form and back on fire. Zrinka Lucic on the podium, which was awesome, 0.34 back. Maltsan picked up a third place, 0.83 back, a little bit further back. But some really good skiing. Lena Dürr looking like she's missing the opportunity to take the globe with no Schifrin and no Vlahova. She would have was expected would have been expecting to close the gap. Oh, great opportunity to take the title, but only could manage sixth, and she's still, as of Soldeo, 188 points behind Michaela Schifrin. And 60 odd points, 63 points behind Petra Vlahova. So, yeah, looks like that title could go to Schifrin without her even putting the skis on. But
Yeah.
the slalom was it was a good race, and just sorry, Ben, just quickly. I think it's an interesting. I was actually probably the race that I was most looking forward to this weekend was that slalom because it was absolutely as wide open. Almost as it's ever been. Was it's certainly in the Schifrin era, really, isn't it? Like absolutely anybody. No Vlahova, no Schifrin, up the two biggest names in women's slalom ski racing, not there. Like what a spectacle it was in terms of, stories and yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know from Gareth what people's picks were for a race with no Schifrin and no Vlahova in it,
Yeah.
because that could have been the first time we didn't just have everyone picking one of two people for that race. To be honest, I would imagine a lot of people probably went with Dürr because she has been the next most consistent person on the tour, and she would have let everyone down in that respect. But she did not look like herself for someone who is normally so smooth. She looked quite jittery and bumpy, which is very unlike her. So I was really not disappointed in a blaming her kind of way, but just it was a surprise to see. And I just was expecting her to not necessarily win by miles, but just be the favorite in that race. And like you said, Sven Larsson, like, didn't even cross my mind to pick her because of how much she's been struggling this year. I would have had more chance of thinking of picking Hector because of the way she's been skiing slalom really well.
Just to let you know, Ben,
Oh
this
no, I can see you pointing at yourself over and over
guy.
again. I picked Paula. I went for Paula, so I was happy. She let me down the other week when I thought she was going to have a blinder. So I was just she was a week or two late coming in for the podium.
I've not picked too many winners this season, but that I'm quite impressed with that one because I very nearly went for Hector as well, and then went then I reckon Sven Larsson's going to get it. But I thought she took her opportunity. She led after the first run. She converted the lead into the win. She was third last race in Jasna. She's been fifth and fourth as well this season. But the beginning of the year, She was in the 20s, barely, barely getting into the second rounds, with how difficult she found that early season. And then what mental strength just to turn that around. And and like you say, somebody had to stick their hand in the air. Somebody had to go, right, what an opportunity this is, and I want it. And I'm not, obviously Dur would have wanted to do that. Leno obviously would have wanted to do it, but just wasn't able to execute, whether she just didn't have the right feel on the equipment, or whether she just maybe felt under too much pressure maybe to perform. Yes, again, like we said, I bet lots of people would have gone for Lena Dern. I bet, that was, she was probably odds on just purely because of the early season form that she's shown and how quickly she's been skiing earlier on, but just for some reason just wasn't there.
Yeah, and it may well be that in her own mind she said had that same conversation of, oh my God, there's no Shiffrin, there's no Vlahova, I don't know how long Shiffrin's going to be out for. This could be it. This could be my opportunity. I've got to win this weekend. And might could have done it to herself almost, let alone the external pressures of other people thinking you're the new favourite. But just in your own head saying this is it. I compete with those two all the time, and now they're not here. This is it for me. Which is a shame, and hopefully she can get ahead right for whatever comes next. But as well as obviously Dura didn't have the date she wanted, there are a couple of I guess monster early second runs, and there was a feeling for a little while of, was this going to be Chamonix all over again, for the French girl Chiara Pogno, who went from 30th to 10th in the end, she ended up being, but set that fastest second run, went down early and skied really nicely. Again, a bit like you said with Daniel Yule, in terms of the run deserved the rise in position. It wasn't like a, oh, the conditions just got worse. She skied really well. There, I think the Italian Vera Certainthaler did similarly. I think she ended up like not 18th or so. But there are a couple of really good early runs from people that could be quite interesting to see their careers in the coming years, because these are the kind of names you want to be looking out for in the future. Those ones that putting those good second runs in.
Exactly. And yeah, and these young athletes coming through, it was pretty cool. A shame that we didn't see that sort of continuation from the Latvian. She did a thing on Eurosport about how to say her name, and it was like, wasn't Germaine. It was like, yeah, I can't
Oh,
remember.
Zenifera.
Yeah, that sounds like Jennifer, but with a Xenifer at the front of it. But their surname reads like Germaine, but it's yeah, it's obviously not that one. Xenifer. Shame that she didn't manage to continue that really good form, and that, so young, so r quickly her rise has been a bit of a shame for the to not see that continuation. But that's a real talent that the Latvians have got there. I know that she skis out of the group in teen at Apex
Apex.
2100. Yeah, so good for her, good for them. Because we've got a few of them skiing out there, so yeah, nice to see, nice to see. But yeah, anything else to add on the women's slalom side? But one thing, just quickly, just get your viewpoint on it. Obviously, potentially no Shiffrin, but definitely no Vlahova the rest of the year. Do you think, for Sven Larsson, getting a couple of victories under her belt all of a sudden gives her maybe the added belief that maybe that's the difference, to try and get closer to the likes of Shiffrin and Vlahova on like a regular basis? Or do you sort of see
I
her
hope so.
live
I
in the
think there
moment?
was, she had that really long wait for the win, and then the first time she got the win, it was the joint win with Wendy, wasn't it? And then Wendy kicked on and won like a week later, whereas Sven Nielsen not struggled, but just didn't get that win, solo win until now, I think. And I hope so. Just that not much has come out, I don't think, about what her early season struggles were, whether it was set up, whether it was mental, or kind of a combination of the two. But you would really hope so. I mean, she's been around a long time now, Sven Nielsen. She's 32. You would hope she knows her skiing and her equipment well enough that she's at the point in her career where, you know, the physical stuff, she knows what works for her body, she knows what works for her, so she can get herself in the right shape for the start of next season if she wants to race. And then, like you say, know that she's got that skiing in her. She was always one where you could never question her effort when she's racing. Sometimes it's a case of, is she trying too hard and almost slowing herself down with how hard she's trying to push. But I really hope so, because again, you know, we like when Shiffrin and Vlahova put on master classes, but we also like when people push them really, really close. And hopefully with Wendy coming back next season, if her, you know, ankle's better and those kind of things, we can have a group of people that can start challenging. And you don't want it to be like the men's where people are skiing out and that's why you keep getting different winners. But it would be good if you could have, you know, four or five different winners in the season, and it's not to do with people's injuries.
Yeah, exactly. Nice point, well made. Would you like to now talk about
Segue.
injuries and races?
I guess I mean we don't have to, but it's kind of dominated certainly the Shiffrin news cycle for a week. So it bears us talking about it as people who observe the sport as much as we do, and you have to talk about it for a living. But yeah, so Shiffrin this week gave an update on her kind of fitness and recovery process from her injury. And in that post on Instagram, or probably all of the social media platforms, also mentioned that it was, you know, high time that certain powers that be look into the rate of injury amongst the top level athletes in ski racing. Certainly those, she said, that are in the top 15 and podium races regularly, so the people who have to attend the bib draws and the post race ceremonies and those kind of things, and effectively called into question how much off hill work they have to do, whether it's obviously it's not a, you know, it's a post written on social media, it's not an academic research article into what's going on, but effectively saying she's got to do a lot of stuff off the hill, and that creates a fatigue that might be causing the injuries when you think of how many of our top level athletes have been injured this year. So, I mean, without having to run through a whole list of everyone who's injured, people who were favourites for lots of globes or contenders for lots of globes are now sitting out the rest of the season with varying levels of injury, a lot of which are quite bad. And you know, we had the talk after the Kilder injury about there not being any more replacement speed events being put in weekends where they already had, you know, races on, doing two Vengeance and two Kitzbühels and things like that. Is it safe to ask people to do that in a weekend? Was the discussion we had before, whereas Shiffrin's now added to that discussion not just the scheduling being tight, but also the amount of work racers have to do before and after events when they're in resort. And as the person on this podcast who never did a World Cup ski race, I think I'm best placed to talk about it. And it is something that is very much away from our eyes. Like, unless you're in resort, you don't know how much these people are doing. You know, it would be fun to go to a bib draw, you know, a ceremonial prize giving or a formal prize giving after the ceremonial one at the slope. But I don't know how much the time demands of those people are. Like, we know, you know, Shiffrin, you regularly refer to as the greatest of all time. Unfortunately, that means a lot of people want to talk to you, and a lot of news outlets will all want to speak to Michaela Shiffrin about, you know, her 100th win, 110th win, 120th win. You know, unfortunately, you can't be that good without everyone wanting a piece of you. And, you know, she has a pretty big team of people around her to hopefully manage that availability as much as possible, and her recovery and those kind of things. But it's interesting to discuss and think about, you know, what do these racers have to do? Is it actually why they're crashing? You know, obviously the big thing with Kilder the week before his crash was that he'd been ill. You know, him and Shiffrin had both been come down with a cold after a training block or not training block together, because they'd had a week off or were just doing some fitness between races. They both got a cold, and you know, you were saying on commentary, he's been under the weather, he's been under the weather, and then at the end of a second very long downhill, had a really horrible crash. You know, was the reason for his fatigue his illness, and was the illness brought about by doing too much, off mountain press and whatever else? I don't really know what's asked of these people. Maybe we need to get Marcel on as the person who's been standing on podiums before and had people want to talk to him at ski races.
I think it is an interesting one, and we did actually talk about that at length in Wengen as well, because of how late Wengen started. If just take that men's, and obviously that's a one race snapshot, and it happens to be the Kilder one, we had lots of delays. They start late in Wengen anyway, and then because it takes people a long time to come up, because obviously you can't drive up to resort there, so you've also got to get the train, so they've got to give fans the time to get in. So then there's a load of press, then you've got to do recovery, then you've got to do the bib draw for the next day. And it's very demanding. The thing that I find difficult is that these guys are paid very handsomely to ski down a run for 90 seconds on average, or whatever it is. So, you could say, right, well, you don't need to do the press, but the prize money is going to be less because you've got less access. So, because we're given the punters and the media less access to you, so that you can recover and you can train and you can be ready for the next race the next day. And I would hazard a guess, and it is a guess, to say that they wouldn't be very happy if you decided to halve the prize money, if you halve the time that they had to spend doing all the media obligations. I think that they wouldn't like it. So, sport is an entertainment business. Sport, and for it to be entertaining, you've got to have the fans. And if you don't get the fans the access, you don't have as many fans, you don't get paid as much money. And that's sort of, that is, it's cyclical. You only race on average 2 days a week. It's not like you're doing that every single day, and yes, it is hard, and yes, it's tiring, but is it above and beyond? Probably not. You get 100,000 Swiss francs for a World Cup victory. I think you can spend a couple of hours or a few hours in the afternoon winning, going through your interviews and stuff, which you have to, your obligations for winning, and being handed a check for 100,000 Swiss francs for racing for 2 minutes worth of work. I think, I find it difficult.
It's a really difficult thing to kind of discuss, because you don't want to be, kind of just the old man, you're paid well, do your job kind of thing, because the athletes are very high performance people and machines, and their bodies are very well looked after. And fatigue's one of those things that's, for all of the smartwatches and sleep trackers and those kind of things, fatigue's actually quite a difficult thing to fully understand what it's doing to you and when it's there. So yeah, you don't want to be jumping down their throats, but at the same time, looking at some of the crashes, it's so hard to draw a link between the two. Let's put it that way, because especially with someone like Godia, who's now injured, she could be first race of the season, best condition of her life, and crash and be out for the season. That's her style of skiing, brings that about for her. Whereas the people who do, I guess, a lot more events, and it'd be interesting to hear from someone who's not injured and see if Odermatt's concerned about that, because he's skiing three out of four disciplines. He's dominating all of them. If there's anyone in the world right now of ski racing that is doing as much press as Michaela Schifrin, is probably going to be Odermatt right now. So is he feeling the stress and strain of it at this point in the season? Is he worried he might get injured because he's fatigued? Another thing that stands out is Schifrin burst onto the scene when she was like 16. She's 28 now. Perhaps the fatigue is more, I've been doing this, answering the same questions for a decade. Whereas for some of the younger guys, like Odermatt's living his, best life, for want of a better word. He's only been doing it 2, 3 years. Maybe if we ask him in 8 years if he's exhausted of doing press conferences, he'd probably say, yes, I am. But it'll be interesting to see if anything comes from Schifrin's comments in terms of if either FIS respond or someone, does some kind of, look into or study of the levels of fatigue, and if it's having any aspects on injury, or influence on the rate of injury in the sport. It's really tough to say. Like, we don't want to see less of our racers. Obviously, we had Nick on a few weeks ago talking about having more access to races in the week and people being able to see more of them. Granted, that's in things like training runs. It's not necessarily events where their time is required. It's things they'd be doing anyway, but just putting cameras there. But you know, in a world where people want more and more of the superstars, the likelihood isn't that we're going to see less of them. It's that they're going to be asked for more of. And if it means Michaela needs to do more of what she's done in the past in terms of managing her schedule and just saying, okay, I'm just not going to this race weekend, then the organizers and fearsome people will need to be like, well, if we've put in so many events on that the best racer in the world doesn't want to come to an entire weekend, then maybe we need to do something about it.
And I think that's fair. I was just looking through, I've got the last 2 years of World Cup racing absolutely to hand. 2022, I couldn't find quick enough. But I think this year, 2024 year, there are 45 men's races and 45 women's races. Last year, there were 43 men's races and 42 women's races. So there were less races last year. And then 2022, I've just had to add up, and I'm not sure if it's 100% right, but the men race 48 times, and the women race 46 times. So that was 2022 season. So I think they've dialed it back since then. So it is interesting, but yeah, I think you made some valid points. Like if I mean, Shiffrin still won the over, and again, like I know that it sounds like it could easily sound like we're taking a pop at Shiffrin. It's just that Shiffrin said these comments, and obviously her comments go to the top of every ski racers, who every person that's interested in ski racing, because she is the highest profile. And obviously, when she makes these comments, she knows that those are going to be the ones that are scrutinized more than if I don't know, Charlie Raposo or
No comment.
you know, but
Yeah,
even
Brignone,
anybody,
another
Brignone,
high profile racer that isn't Michaela Schifrin.
exactly. So she's the one putting her neck on the block when she says this sort of stuff. But also at the same time, she's won the overall not going to all the races. So you could arguably say that maybe they didn't need to push to do that race. They should have picked better if she was feeling a bit tired, then they shouldn't have gone to race. If they think fatigue's the reason that she hurt her knee, then maybe she shouldn't have raced. But obviously
Yeah, and
that
I
the
think
Olympic hill, that was going to be the Olympic hill, which is again why she went there. You know, why she trained that, because she wanted to prep for the Olympic Games coming up in 2 years' time. So there's loads of different connotations around it. I think it is really, it's really, really interesting. But I don't think that asking racers to do 2 full days of commitments, or three, if you're racing, you know, the women this weekend are racing for 3 days. So they're doing 3 full days of commitment. So racing in the morning, and if you're lucky enough to be on the podium, then your duty is to go and do interviews on the afternoon. So you're doing an extra half a day's work than everybody else that doesn't get on a podium. I can guarantee you everybody that isn't on the podium would give their right arm to have won. So they have to go and do that extra half a day's worth of work. And are they put? Is it dangerous that we're doing this many races? I don't know that it. I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and say that, sitting on the sofa or sitting on the commentary booth or whatever. But two races a weekend. Yes, the only other thing is the schedules have changed, and we are going more global again, which is what the fans and FIS and, you know, they're trying to make the sport more global, trying to bring more money so the athletes get paid better. Obviously, the organization gets, you know, more well renowned if we go globally. So at the same time, like FIS are trying to put on to create the best product by racing all the time. If you only raced every other week, or every, you know, once three, you know, 3 or 4 times a month in total, then you wouldn't know when the ski racing's on unless you're an avid fan, where you then have to look at it. But you know, any ski racer knows that there's going to be ski racing on this coming weekend in the winter months, or maybe most of the winter months and some of the pre-winter months.
Yeah,
So.
I think though, especially is this is a period of time that January and February window is one of those periods of time where, as a ski racing fan, you know it's just non-stop racing. And yes, it is not every day. There's lots of travel involved, and that's the bit that we don't see. But there is, you know, there's always a race around the corner. So you know that is the tightest bit of the schedule. But if there wasn't races every few days, like when they have the, you know, the Schladming-Kitzbühel, you know. Wengen and that kind of little strip of races that all happen at the same time every year. If they said, "Oh, we're moving this one back 4 weeks to give people more of a break," you would be disappointed as a fan. You'd be like, "Oh no, I like when they're all right in there." But if all the racers turned around and said, "We're too tired. We're not doing Schladming this week. We don't want to do midweek races," we'd change the calendar pretty quickly to accommodate that. I'd be very grumpy because I love it, but I'd still watch it when it does go on.
It is really interesting. I don't know what the answer is, mate. I don't
No,
know, because it's
no.
not also like the ski. They tried to change the skis to make it safer when they brought in the 195 GS skis and bigger turning radiuses to try and help with the injuries. Didn't really make a huge amount of difference. The nets are as good as nets can be. We have a few air fences in places. The suits are supposed to be getting better. You're supposed to have cut proof thermals on underneath. You know, you've got airbag systems in terms of crashes, which you never used to have back in my day. You know, all that sort of stuff. Like
Didn't go fast enough to crash in my day.
the technology is getting slightly better, but it's the nature of the sport. I don't know, like
I think that's the thing in terms of
difficult.
trying to combine it to injuries is all of these people will always push themselves to their absolute limit to try and win.
Yes.
And that's so it doesn't matter if you're fatigued, not fatigued, or anything else, you're not going to dial it back because if you have put your poles over that wand, you are going to give it absolutely everything for the win.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if anything, I'd say just the desire of ski racers is what gets them injured. It's obviously an awful lot of bad luck as well. You know,
Yes.
none of this is ever anyone's fault. They're always just trying their absolute hardest to cut every hundredth off of every run that they possibly can. And you know, when you push to those limits, that's when accidents and crashes happen, and the faster you're going, unfortunately, the more likely you are that something bad's going to happen when you hit the nets or don't hit the nets. And it's a shame. I'd be again, like we said, it'd be really interesting to see if FIS come out with a response or if any of the event organisers, as this is, you know, like talking a lot about what happens off the hill, which isn't necessarily FIS's domain. You know, that could be the individual resorts putting on lots of events for fans to come to and get their money's worth for coming to the resort. It may well be that some event organisers say, "Well, this is what our schedule is for races, and this is why we do it." It would be kind of handy to see because, as someone who's not in it, it would be interesting to see what the event organisers' version of why they ask people to do what they do would be.
You're trying to make you also you know FIS also trying to make these guys household names, guys, girls, athletes, guys, general. They're trying to make these guys, you know, household names, and to make them household names, you've got to see them more times, whether it's on your telly or you know, on your phones, or whether it's on, you know, in the finish area if you're in resort. Like, if you're in resort, they want to put on a song and dance the night before, so people go, oh, I wondered why that big red netting was down the side of this one piece. Oh, that must be something to do with that. Let's go and watch that tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, you maybe find new fans. So, yeah, it's difficult. I don't think it's just, you know, if you want the money, which they do, which everybody, you know, all racers want to get paid as much as possible for doing the job they do. It's like anybody wants to get paid as much as possible for doing their job. Then the obligations come with it. If you don't, maybe FIS go, do you know what? We understand you're tired. If you come to the post-race interviews, you get the full whack. If you don't come to the post-race interviews, which is absolutely your prerogative, you only get 50% of the, or 75%, you lose a percentage of your winnings. There you go. Then all of a sudden, we'll see how much people want to come to the press chat afterwards and who don't. I think that's my FIS hat on. That I'm going to make my stance. Watch out, Johan Eliash, I'm coming. I think that's done and dusted. I think we've completed ski racing.
Didn't win it, but we
No,
completed
we completed. Yeah, we didn't defeat the boss, but we certainly talked a lot
it.
about it. This coming weekend, we're back in action again. 3 days of racing for the women over in Crans-Montana in Switzerland. They have two downhills and a Super G Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The men are in Kvitfjell in Norway for downhill and Super G. That's Saturday and Sunday. Ben, it's just you and me, mate. Marcel's already picked Raposo for all of the races. do you want to kick us off with a couple picks here, mate?
And a couple of downhills with no Goggias, and already an interesting one. Trying to work out who's going to be next up. Just go with Gutberami. Let's go home snow.
What are you going? Are you going th the three-peat, or are you just going for the
No,
first
just
one?
downhill one. We're taking turns.
Okay, all right. Well, that's nice. Okay, so yes, no Goggia. I'm looking at the table of not our leaderboard table because I'm so far down. The standings table. So no Goggia. Stephanie Vanier is 89 points off Goggia at the moment. She's second, Gutberami third, Hooter fourth. Just trying to think about Crans-Montana. I'm not sure if it's steep enough and gnarly enough for Gutberami. So I'm going to go Hooter for race one.
What about race two?
Race two, I might go for. Do you know what? I was nearly very bold and went with Brignone, but I think that might be a tiny bit too exciting for me. And I might go. Do you know what? I might just go Vanier. I'm going to go double Austria in Switzerland. What about
Fair
you?
enough. I will go for a different Austrian. I'm going to go Puckner.
Nice. Nice. Okay, and Super G Sunday.
That I'm going back to Gutberami, even if you don't think it's steep enough for her.
I might go Norwegian on this one.
The Norwegians, they've been going well.
I might go for Pasha Vikoff Lee on this one.
I reckon that's a good shout.
So that's where I'm at for that one. And then the men are over in Kvitfjell for the cruisy downhills over in Norway. And the first race is, like I say, is the downhill. So shall I go? I'll go first for the downhill. Oh, do I think it's cruisy enough for Bryce Bennett? That is the question.
Cool.
No. Oh, could it be? I'm going to go. Do you know what? I'm going Paris.
I was thinking him, but I was just like, oh, is he gonna enjoy the craziness of it all, or does he need it to be, I guess, mental was what I was gonna say. See, normally I'd say Kriegmeier in a race like this because his feel and his tuck and his just everything works. But this year he's been so all over the place. He's fifth in the standings, but you can't trust him to
Don't
do
trust him.
anything.
Don't trust him.
No, but I might just go Vodemat as probably the safe bet on this one. Sarasans, I feel like he's too wild to be dealing with a really cruisy downhill.
I just don't know if we've seen the cons I mean, we it, how much of the consistency. Yes, he put together some good results, but he's now had a couple of bad. We don't know how good his bounce back is like, so
True.
yeah. Okay, so you've gone Odomat
Put it down here yet.
down, right? Super G then, where are you at?
I'm gonna try Kriegmeier for the Super G.
Ah, I was gonna go Kriegmeier for the Super G. I just can't pick Odomat, even though it feels like almost a dead cert, doesn't it? Do you know what? Do you think Sehrestad could do it?
I mean, that home snow, you would hope so.
He would have been
Like,
training there this week, surely. Feeling really good on those long skis.
surprised you didn't go for Maillard. Go for a little sneaky, smooth Swiss man.
No.
It's too far down the standings, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I've got to scroll too far down to see. Yeah, I am
He did
tempted
have a
to
Super
go
G
for like,
podium, though, right, didn't he?
huh?
He did have a Super G podium this year.
Who did?
Matt, didn't Mayod?
Yeah, in one of the ones in Garmisch.
Okay, so he had, yeah, so he has done it. It's just not consistently in that discipline.
Oh, passer.
Again, Harsa. Guys both picking Austrians when Marcel's not here.
I know. Well, Marcel's picked a Brit for every race, so it's certainly fair.
Don't have a huge amount going on in the speed these days, do we?
No, unfortunately not. Right, well, Ben, that sort of brings us to the close, my friend. Until next time, bye for now.